Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm James Taylor, and in part one of this episode, I'm going to round up the action from J2 Matchday 1 games on Saturday. In part two, John Steele will talk you through Sunday's games, and then he and I will discuss the main talking points of the round and look ahead to round two. So the 2023 J2 season finally got underway on Saturday the 18th at 1:09 on the dot, as Vanfore Kofu welcomed Monterio Yamagata to the JIT Recycle Inc. Stadium. The visitors' goalie Masaaki Goto was called into action first with a good save from Kofu's Hidehiro Sugai in the second minute. Yamagata took the lead in the ninth minute when Zane Isaka ran onto a pass down the right and crossed for De La Torre, who managed to get several yards ahead of his marker. He almost doubled the lead just before half-time, but his shot from just inside the area went just wide. In the 57th minute, De La Torre had another chance, a header that was clawed away by Kofu keeper Kohei Kawata. Actually, he tipped it onto the bar. The hosts drew level in the 70th minute through a header from a corner by substitute Kosuke Taketomi. The parity lasted only 7 minutes, as Thiago Alves was dripped in the box by Hideomi Yamamoto. He had a rough day overall, and the Portuguese striker scored the penalty to clinch a 2-1 win for Yamagata. There were 6 games at 2 o'clock, and we'll start with the match between the two promoted sides. 2022 J3 champions Iwaki FC hosted 2022 J3 runners-up Fujieda Mai FC. The hosts had several chances in the opening 30 minutes, despite having very little of the ball, but profligate finishing kept it scoreless until a shocking burst of 3 goals in 10 minutes from Fujieda just before half-time. In the 35th minute, a long-range shot from Masahiko Sugita was so badly sliced that it spun towards the corner flag, where teammate Tojiro Kubo collected it and crossed for Ryo Watanabe to head in. 2 minutes later, a long ball from Fujieda keeper Tomoki Ueda found Keigo Enomoto on the left. He advanced with plenty of time and space, cut inside and back-heeled for Akiyuki Yokoyama to curl a shot over the keeper and in off the bar. Then, in the 45th minute, Fujieda got their third. A shot from Taiki Arai was blocked, but fell kindly to Kubo, who squared for Watanabe to tap in. 3-0 at half-time. A dream start to life in the second division for Fujieda, a nightmare for Iwaki. But the hosts pulled one back 4 minutes into the second half. Kaina Tanimura squared for Riku Saga to backheel past Ueda, and then on the hour, Iwaki got another. A bit fortunate, but they all count. Sota Nagai crossed for Tanimura, and the ball bounced off him, off Ueda, and then in off Tanimura. Iwaki couldn't find an equaliser though, and it finished 3-2 to Fujieda. Next up, a meeting of two teams that many expect to struggle this year, Thespa Kasats Gunma and Blaublitz Akita. Akita keeper Kentaro Kakoi got down low to turn away a shot from Kazuma Okamoto in the 14th minute. At the other end, Hiroto Morooka had a shot deflected wide, and Ryotaro Iyo, returning from a long injury, put a free header wide. In the 37th minute, Akita's Shota Aoki hit the bar with a header, and Keita Saito headed over from close range. The first chance of the second half fell to Gunma's Motoki Nakakura, but he shot high and wide. Shota Aoki had 2 near misses, a header just over, and an attempted lob that Masatoshi Kushibiki got a hand to, so this one finished goalless. Also goalless was the game between Shimizu S-Pulse and Mito Hollyhock. There were plenty of chances in this one though. Koya Kitagawa, Yuji Takahashi and Thiago Santana all went close for S-Pulse in the first half, with Mito's Shoji Toyama twice and Ryo Yasunaga also going close. Just after the hour mark, Mito goalie Lui Yamaguchi saved very well from Santana. Shimizu's Reon Yamahara hit the bar with a free kick, and then S-Pulse should have won it in stoppage time, but a rebound was somehow put wide by Kenta Nishizawa, and the points were shared. There were goals at the Yamaha Stadium, as Jubilo Iwata played Fajiano Okayama. The visitors went ahead after 25 minutes when Solomon Sakuragawa turned in a corner that had been headed back across by Yasutaka Yanagi. 5 minutes later it was 2-0. Sakuragawa hit the post with a shot from the edge of the area, and the ball found its way to Issa Sakamoto, who had plenty of time and space to advance on goal and smash a shot past Yuji Kajikawa. Okayama were 3 up 9 minutes into the second half. Sakuragawa again given far too much time and space, but his shot was blocked by a covering defender, only for Kodai Sano to score. 2 late goals from 17-year-old Iwata substitute Kensuke Goto made it interesting. The first, a near-post tap-in in the 89th minute. The second, a near-post header from a short corner routine. But it was too little, too late, and Iwata's return to J2 starts with a loss. Jeff United Chiba headed to the Transcosmos Stadium in Nagasaki and returned with 3 points thanks to a 1-0 win over Vivara Nagasaki. The hosts went closest in the first half with Taisei Abe hitting the post in stoppage time. The goal came in the 52nd minute. Taishi Taguchi hit the post with a shot from 20 yards and Hiro Komori was on hand to tap in the loose ball. Jeff finished the game with 10 men as Kazuki Tanaka was shown a red card for a dangerous tackle on Kazuki Ishibiki in the 81st minute. Tanaka had only come off the bench 7 minutes earlier, and although his excuse was that he slipped, it was still dangerous. Nevertheless, Jeff held on for the 3 points. The last Saturday game was Reno for Yamaguchi against Omiya Ardija. This one also ended 1-0, with ex-Omiya man Shinya Yajima scoring against his former club in the 72nd minute. Yamaguchi's Seigo Kobayashi broke down the left, and his low cross was cleared as far as Yajima on the edge of the area. Yajima took a few paces forward and shot, and the ball took a deflection and looped over the helpless Takashi Kasahara. Omiya's best chances came from set pieces, but they couldn't hit the target and went home with nothing. That's all of Saturday's games taken care of. Up next, John's got all the action from Sunday's matches.
Thanks for that, James. Hi, everyone. John Steele here to round up the J2 action from round one from four games played on Sunday. And we'll start in the capital, where there was a winning start for Tokyo Verdy. They won 1-0 at home to Kanazawa, thanks to a superb close-range header from Ren Kato midway through the second half. In the first half, Verdy had dominated the game without managing to break the deadlock, and Kanazawa were pretty fortunate to be going in level at the break. In the second period, Yuta Narawa, a Verdy defender, made a great covering tackle to stop Jefferson Bayano from having a clear sight of goal for the visitors, but shortly after that, Kato struck with the goal that proved to be the winner. Verdy did bundle in another goal, a second goal late on, but it was correctly disallowed for an offside against Tomohiro Taira. So yeah, a winning start for the green half of Tokyo. Tokyo Verdy 1, Zweigen Kanazawa 0. In one of the big games of round one, it finished Machida 0, Sendai 0 at Nozuta. I think Sendai might be the happiest side with a point from this game, as Machida had most of the possession and chances. Just before the half hour, we got a glimpse of how important Eric might be for this Machida team this season. He stole the ball on the halfway line, showed great pace to get ahead of the Sendai backline, but then he fired his shot against the underside of the crossbar, and Sendai escaped. The visitors had another let-off before half-time when their goalkeeper Akihiro Hayashi spilled a cross from Mitch Duke. The ball ran loose to Eric, but a posse of covering Sendai defenders smothered his shot. Hayashi, by the way, starting a goal, surprisingly preferred to Yuma Obata, who was a mainstay between the sticks last season. That was an interesting selection for Sendai. There were plenty more chances for Machida in the second half. I think Yu Hirakawa was guilty of wasting at least two of them. But the final score was Machida 0, Sendai 0. Lots of positives for both sides from this game. I think Machida is an attacking force and Sendai defensively looked pretty strong. So yeah, 0-0 at full time, but plenty of good points for both coaches to reflect on. There was some refereeing controversy and late drama in windy conditions at Tokushima. The final score in the match was Tokushima Vortis 1, Oita Trinita 2. Now, Oita had taken the lead 5 minutes into the second half thanks to a typical Naoki Nomura goal. He seized on a loose ball outside the penalty area, quickly shifted the ball onto his left foot, and then sent a low strike into Jose Aurelio Suarez's bottom right-hand corner. So Oita 1-0 up in the 50th minute. Then in the 64th minute, Oita thought they were going to have the chance to double their lead from the penalty spot. The referee gave a penalty for a handball by Tokushima's Tatsunori Sakurai, but after 3 minutes of discussions and protests from Tokushima players and a chat with the assistant referee over on the far side, the decision was reversed and play was restarted with a drop ball just on the edge of the Tokushima penalty area. So the referee kind of rescinded the decision to give the penalty, which left Tokushima relieved and Oita confused. And Tokushima thought they'd earned a point when they eventually equalised in the 88th minute. Oita's debutant goalie, Konosuke Nishikawa, didn't do a great job of dealing with a deflected shot. He ended up patting the ball down really into the 6-yard box for Tayo Nishino, another player making his J-League debut, to rifle the ball home at the second attempt after his first shot was blocked. But Oita stunned their host and probably ensured a better night's sleep for the referee by winning it with a goal in the 93rd minute. A clever backheeled flick from new Brazilian defender Derlan created a chance for Shinya Utsumoto to fire into the roof of the net for close range. So a winning start for Oita and a late heartbreak for Tokushima. This one finished Tokushima 1, Oita 2. There was some more late drama at the Kanseki Stadium, where it finished Tochigi 1, Kumamoto 1. Tochigi got a 91st minute equaliser through a Toshiki Mori header in this game. In a bright first half, Kumamoto struck the woodwork twice through Rimu Matsuoka and Shohei Mishima, but it was 0-0 at the interval. In the second period, Tochigi stepped things up a little bit and Ko Miyazaki managed to head the ball past Kumamoto keeper Ryuga Tashiro, but Yuhi Takemoto, one of the kind of star players from last season who's still at Kumamoto for this year, Takemoto was there to clear the ball off the line for a corner. In Kumamoto, goalkeeper Ryuga Tashiro, quite surprising, he was picked to start ahead of veteran Yuya Sato, who was on the bench. It might be a new look kind of goalkeeping style for Kumamoto this season. Tochigi had another good chance when Hayato Kurosaki was sent clean through, but his shot was brilliantly blocked by Tashiro, who was racing out of his goal to confront him. And midway through the second half, Kumamoto went in front with a quite brilliant goal. Daichi Ishikawa flicking Shohei Aihara's cross into the roof of the net at the near post. So Kumamoto 1-0 up with about 22 minutes to go. And it looked like they were going to take all 3 points back to Kyushu, but things got a little bit more complicated in the 82nd minute when they were reduced to 10 men. Matsuoka, who was signed from Tochigi in the off-season, picked up a second yellow card for a reckless studs-up tackle, and he was sent off. And Tochigi went for broke after that against the 10 men and got their reward right at the start of stoppage time when Mori connected with Kojiro Yasuda's cross and beat Tashiro with the aid of a deflection. So full-time was Tochigi 1, Kumamoto 1. I think Kumamoto are obviously going to be disappointed they didn't hold out and get the win, but there were plenty of positives for both teams in what was a very entertaining match. All right, I think that's all for me for the Sunday action, so please stay tuned after a quick hit of music. James and I got together, and we're going to run through some of the big talking points from round one over Saturday and Sunday. So, here comes me and James. J-Talk
Extra Time. Welcome back to J-Talk Extra Time. James and John here to talk you through the main talking points from round one. First of all, John, a happy new season. Did you enjoy the opening weekend?
Oh, thanks a lot, James. Yes, happy new season to you and all the listeners. Yeah, I know we're on the J2 beat for the next 25 or 30 minutes, but I was promoted to J1 just for the day on Saturday. So I was at Yokohama FC for their game against Nagoya, which was very hot and sweaty. I ran out of deodorant before kickoff, which was unfortunate timing on my part. But yeah, it was good fun. Unfortunately, my son was disappointed. Yokohama FC lost, but I kind of told him we better get used to that for the rest of the season. But I'm all good. But let's talk about J2.
Yeah, all right, because there's plenty to talk about, and we've picked out a few games that had some interesting moments. Everyone's heard our roundup. So we're not going to dwell too much on describing the goals or anything, but we're going to start by talking about Iwaki FC 2, Fujieda Mai FC 3. We picked this one out last week as potentially intriguing, but I don't think we had this scoreline in mind. John, what did you think about this game?
Yeah, well, I've upgraded. I think intriguing was the word we used last week when previewing the opening round, but I've upgraded it to crazy in my post-match notes. I put crazy game here. Yeah, so this the kickoff time was the same as the Yokohama FC game that I was at. So I just checked the score at half time, and Fujieda were sort of running riot and were 3-0 up. I had to double check that. I thought maybe the scoreline was in the wrong column because, you know, we talked in pre-season about Iwaki, you know, an upwardly mobile team and sort of tipped. I don't know if we'd say they're tipped to do well, but they're certainly not tipped to struggle really in J2 this year. With the Fujieda, it's just the opposite. So, yeah, for them to be sort of 3-0 up at half time was not expected. I know we're not going to talk about the goals in detail in this segment, but they're all very well taken, you know, well constructed and well taken goals. So no arguments about the three goals. But then, in the second half, it was this, you know, typical, well, I was going to say typical J2 match, but I think you could even extend that and say it was more like a typical J3 match where, by the 60th minute, it was 3-2. Iwaki had pulled two goals back. Fujita didn't really seem to have much interest or ability in terms of managing the game or controlling the game. And then it just was like a basketball game for the rest of the time. And Ryo Watanabe, I've always liked him. In his J3 days, I got the, it was starting to seem like he would never get a chance or move up to a higher level. But he's there now with Fujita, and I think he was the it was a really good team performance from them. But he was the standout player, obviously, with two extremely well taken goals. But I think Fujita have won, and they'll be delighted. But it wasn't a commanding win in the end, was it? Could have gone either way, or Iwaki could have got the draw. What did you make of it, James?
Yeah, it was really interesting because for the first half an hour or so, I think Fujita, they seemed to have more of the ball, but Iwaki had all the good chances. There was one where I think it was Tanimura had a good chance from about 10 yards, but somehow put it wide. And they had a 4-on-2 where they didn't even get a shot off. They hit the bar at one point. They had a few other near misses. It was one of those days where you're thinking, oh, they're not going to hit a cow's ass with a banjo kind of thing. And then Fujita suddenly got those three in quick succession. And the first one as well, we kind of, not out of nowhere, but I don't think that that sliced shot should have led to a goal. It was good. It was quick thinking by the, Kubo out on the right wing to chase that ball down ahead of the defender. Like you said, the goals were well worked. And I think you've got to give credit to Iwaki for the way they were able to keep going when they came out after the second half. They didn't kind of think of it as a lost cause, and they did score two early goals and got themselves right back into it. And yeah, it was really end to end. It was a really entertaining game. I don't think it tells us particularly. I mean, it's only their first match, so it won't tell us particularly anything about the fortunes of these teams this season, but it will tell their coaches a lot about what they need to work on. Iwaki keeping concentration and taking their chances. For Fujita, it's not letting teams back into it when they have a lead, I think. But it was really fun. This game was really entertaining.
Yeah, I think as well we can probably sort of assume. I mean, you mentioned how dangerous it is to kind of draw conclusions based on just one game, but unfortunately that's what we're here to do. So I'll jump on that grenade now. I think Fujita are not going to be they're not going to be awful. You know, they're not going to be. I mean, their squad looked a little bit undercooked coming into the season, I think. And I was a bit worried, you know, we'd sort of invoked the spectre of Sagamihara and Iwate when we previewed them. I think they are going to be, based on what I saw in this game, they are going to cause quite a few teams problems with that kind of swashbuckling style that they employed, especially, you know, towards the end of the first half when they scored three goals in about 10 minutes, didn't they? But I think just I just remember that Iwate last year had a fairly decent start, didn't they? I think
they beat Jeff on the opening day.
Yeah, well, they had four away games in a row, didn't they, to start the season, I think, in J2. But the two of those ended up winning. They won 1-0 at Jeff in round one, and then 1-0 at Ryukyu, which, of course, both of them, Iwate and Ryukyu, ended up being relegated. But they had two wins from the first three games, you know, all the way from home. So I think, as a note of caution, I'm not trying to urinate on Fujita's chips early doors, but I think winning the first game is great. But like you said, I think there will be a lot for their kind of coaching staff to talk about in you know, this week about how, okay, guys, we nearly had to win that game twice because we were 3-0 up at halftime, and by the 60th minute, it was the game was well in the balance. So yeah, I think an Iwaki as well won't be too worried, although I do think nobody really in J3 last year gave them such a tough time at home. So I think they might have a bit more of a I'm not sure if they were that bad on the day, gameplay wise in the second half. But I think mentally that might have been a bit of a shock, because you know the narrative is that they're in a sort of consistent ascendancy, and it's not often that they find themselves 3-0 down anywhere, certainly not at home, at half time. So I think that they might need a little bit more recovery time mentally for that. But yeah, but I saw, like you said, a lot of good points for both teams. And I think even though Iwaki have lost, well, they scored two goals and nearly got a draw out of a game that they'd sort of thrown away. And Fujieda, I mean, it was the kind of team where I could imagine them still looking for their first points three or four, five games into the season, and they've got an away win the first time of asking. So, yeah, it was I think entertainment-wise, it was probably the best game of the J2 round, and I think there were good points for both sets of fans to focus on.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to another entertaining game, shall we? Another 3-2. Iwata 2, Okayama 3. How about this one?
Yeah, well, I mean, then the scoreline is the same, right? Two goals for the home team and three for the visitors. But I think the sort of character or the story of this game is quite different, because Okayama were 3-0 up and cruising just until pretty much stoppage time in the second half, weren't they? And then they let in two goals from sort of the young debutant forward, Keisuke Goto. So I think, yeah, Okayama for me were worthy winners. It would probably have been a bit of a travesty if they hadn't got all 3 points. I've written in my notes, statement performance and statement win from Okayama. And I thought Solomon Sakuragawa, Issa Sakamoto, and Sano, you know, kind of in the midfield, they just tormented Iwata's defence and didn't really give them much peace. I think Sakamoto hit the crossbar as well, didn't he? So it could have been 4-0 even. And then, yeah, those two late goals kind of made the scoreline a little bit distorted, because I think Okayama probably were two or three goals better than Iwata on the day. And that will stand them in good stead going into the games they've got coming up. For Iwata, it's funny. I don't know about you, James, but the season never really seems to hit for me until I see the first kind of starting lineups. And I saw Iwata's lineup first when I was watching the highlights. Obviously, that graphic came up first because they were at home. And I thought, oh, okay, that team actually doesn't look too bad. You know, even with their transfer embargo, you know, lack of a kind of winter transfer activity, I thought that looks like quite a decent sort of top six J2 starting lineup. And then a few seconds later, the Okayama team graphic appeared. And then I kind of reassessed. I was like, ah, okay, this looks more like a serious top 16. And yeah, I think that's kind of how it proved. And I think Iwata, normally we say that the you know, newly relegated J1 teams are hot tips to go straight back up. Iwata, a bit of a special case this year. I think they have a lot of work to do, although the Keisuke Goto is obviously a breakout player from this game. But Okayama, and I know you've got a lot to say about them, James, they do seem to have gotten over that kind of slump they had at the end of last season, right? That kind of cost them in the playoffs. But what did you make of the game? I've talked a lot there.
Yeah, Okayama were really good. And the 3-0 lead was deserved. It could have been more. Iwata, that if they defend like that, they're not going to get top six, because they were really bad. For the first goal, Ricardo Grassa, I think it was, kind of was not strong enough with Solomon Sakuragawa, who's a strong guy. So you've got to defend strongly against him. And then for the second goal, again, Sakuragawa was in acres of space on the edge of the box and had a shot that hit the post. And then, you know, Sakamoto had loads of space as well to take a few steps and smash it in. And then the third goal, Sakuragawa was in even more space on the edge of the area. And his shot actually beat the goalie, but was blocked, but fell to, they were on rushing forwards who were unencumbered by markers. And yeah, the fact that Iwata got two late goals, both well taken by Keisuke Goto, made the scoreline close. But to be honest, it wasn't a close game. Iwata were pretty ordinary, and Okayama were really good. Like we saw last year from Okayama, it was the same kind of thing. I mean, I've still got horrible memories of them being 5-1 up against Kanazawa at half-time last year. And this was the same kind of thing, without all the help of penalties like Kanazawa gave them that time. But yeah, I think I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I'm going to anyway. I have talked before, and I did talk the other week about Okayama's attitude, and there were several occasions in this match where they started surrounding the referee. Any incident, even minor free kicks in midfield, there was like four or five or six of them rushing over and gesticulating and waving imaginary cards and stuff like that, and it's just not necessary, right? I mean, they've got Yuri Bice, who's the captain, I think, so he'll go and talk to the ref anyway, and he's always got plenty to say. Don't need another five blokes there with him. There was one incident where Kenyu Sugimoto backed into, I think it was Kawano, and they were going for a header, and Sugimoto had his elbows out, and he elbowed Kawano in the face. But it was a yellow card, which is what he got. He was looking at the ball the whole time. It's not like he looked over his shoulder to see where the defender was and then put his elbows up. So there was no way that would be a red card. But then you had loads of Okayama players coming over and like pointing over and, you know, waving about the ball and stuff. Like, I've no idea what they were trying to... Well, I know what they were trying to do. They're trying to get him sent off, but it didn't work. So it's, for me, it's a shame that they have to have that aspect of their game. But I know that for a lot of people, that is important. That kind of, I don't know, isn't militia or shithousery, but yeah, I mean, I like watching them play football, but I don't like that part of it. And that might make me like a stuffy old fart, but I don't care.
I think I kind of get what you're saying. What we have with Okayama is this weird juxtaposition of that kind of if you follow Yuri Bice on Twitter, which I'm sure you do, he you know, Okayama has this kind of small club siege, you know, us against the world mentality, which I think is no bad thing in isolation. But the funny situation they're in now is they've got so many good, you know, they've assembled a good squad of good players that they don't play like the club under siege anymore. Like they pretty much had the run of the game against Iwata, right? Until stoppage time, when things went a bit, you know, went a bit, they lost control of the game a little bit and let in two goals. So it's weird to see. I imagine the putting pressure on the referee is a tactic that you employ when you're like the underdog team. Or you know the decisions might make a really big difference to you. But I mean, no referee in the world was going to help Iwata back into that game, really, I didn't think. So yeah, like you said, it seemed, I think, unnecessary or needless. And I think the skill for that kind of, if we accept that, you know, surrounding the referee is a tactic, and I that's up for debate, I think skillful deployment of it is probably wise, like rather than just doing it every time. And I think we're going to come on, we're perhaps going to talk about players surrounding referees again in a moment, I suspect. So we can move on. But yeah, I agree. I think it's one of these things where now and again, I don't think it's a good idea to surround the referee and harass officials, but you can, now and again, you can understand it. But in this specific instance, I think it's there's just too much of it. And it didn't, like you said, I mean, you know, they didn't really need any help, you know, with that result, with that game. So it makes you wonder if there's a situation where you know, a referee's decision is critical in a game, is it going to be worse? You know, is it going to be out of control? And it just seemed a bit, it seems an odd juxtaposition of that kind of tactic with such a talented squad. You know, I mean, Fujieda, for example, you could almost imagine them doing a lot of gamesmanship. That's another good euphemism for it, isn't it? But they don't. They don't play that way. So we'll see how it goes. Perhaps it was just a case of Okayama just so desperately wanting to get the win and get the season off to a good start. But you mentioned it last year as well. So I think it's obviously a theme and something we need to keep an eye on. I do think, James, finally on this game, it's perhaps quite instructive that we mentioned Kenyu Sugimoto, who started as Iwata's sort of main striker, only striker. But he, you know, we mentioned him in terms of like clobbering a defender accidentally while looking at the ball, but we haven't mentioned him having any kind of goal threat. It was his, well, one of the replacements, this young guy, young tall striker, wasn't it? Keisuke Goto, who got two goals in the space of about 3 minutes after coming on. So I think that's an interesting selection conundrum for Iwata going forward, if if this young man Goto is perhaps a better option even up front to start games going forward. But yeah.
Yeah, well, Sugimoto did have a couple of good chances and he completely fluffed them. Didn't hit the target. And I would say that from Okayama's point of view, it's probably better for them to have Sugimoto on the pitch because he's not much of a goal threat. He was replaced by Goto, who in that 3-minute spell scored more goals than Sugimoto managed all of last year in 30 matches. So, yeah, instead, this lad Goto, 17 years old, he's still in high school. He played, I think, half an hour in the Emperor's Cup last year, but this was his J League debut. So, great moment for him, and I think it'll be one to keep an eye on for the rest of the year. Mm. But let's move on. You briefly mentioned surrounding referees and drama. The other game that we want to talk about is Tokushima 1, Oita 2. What were your thoughts on this one?
I think, first of all, rip-roaring, kind of the standard rip-roaring J2 finish, right, with sort of Oita equalising in the 88th minute, but then Tokushima equalising in the 88th minute, and then Oita winning it in the 93rd. So the actual sort of grandstand finish to the match was all present and correct. But I think, yeah, we probably need to focus on what happened in the 64th minute, James. An incident so exciting that it was cut out of the DAZN highlights completely. So if anybody wants to see this, they're going to have to scrub through the whole match until the 64th minute. But basically, an Oita player put in a shot from outside the penalty area, which hit Tokushima player Tatanori Sakurai inside the box. And the referee immediately blew the whistle and gave a penalty for handball against Sakurai, which his face, the sort of stunned expression on his face was very, like, he just looked like, I don't know, he'd been told, I don't know, he was adopted or something. I don't know, he just looked completely shell-shocked by the decision. And Tokushima players understandably, shall we say, entered into a dialogue with the referee about this, because... we'll talk about the sort of position of his arm and all the exciting things in a moment. But what happened next was extraordinary. So it was a long conversation between the referee and various Tokushima players. A few Oita players came across to join in as well. And then the ref went over to talk to the assistant referee on the far side, you know, responsible for that half of the pitch. And after a delay of about, what do you reckon, James, 3 minutes probably? About 3 or 4 minutes?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, the referee then changed his mind. And he sort of cancelled the penalty or unawarded the penalty. And then play restarted with a drop ball for Tokushima on the edge of their penalty area. So, I mean, something I tell my son quite often is there's no point arguing with referees because they don't change their minds. And there's no VAR in J2, so that the referee didn't get to see a replay or a video, or didn't have anybody, you know, in his earpiece telling him that he'd made a mistake or the decision was wrong. So, my big question is just what happened in that kind of 3 minutes to make the referee change his mind? And James, I'm gonna throw you under the bus for the first time this season and ask you that question.
Yeah, well, what's the magic number? I mean, Tokushima had 10 players around the referee and he changed his mind. Okayama had sort of 4 or 5 or 6 and the ref never changed his mind. So there must be, what is it, 7, 8 or 9? What's the threshold? No, so for me, this was a penalty based on the handball rule as it is now, which I know a lot of people have problems with. Anything that hits the hand or arm in the area is a handball and a penalty. That if that's the rule as it has been for the last couple of years, and the defender had his arm by his side, sort of straight, so, you know, pointing downwards, and the ball hit his arm. He wasn't trying to move his arm out of the way, which is what he claimed. He moved his arm after the ball hit it. So, I think a penalty was the correct decision in this case, based on the handball rule as it is and has been applied over the last couple of seasons. Mm. But I think maybe the sheer number of players, and they must have been pretty convincing in their arguments. I don't know how experienced or inexperienced the referee was. That might have played into it if he hadn't done many J2 matches before, I don't know. I think conferring with the assistant is fine. A referee, I think, should do that. They should use their it's an extra set of eyes, right? That's what the assistant is for. But I just thought it was strange, yeah, like you, that the penalty was rescinded, because to me it looked like an obvious one. Yeah, it wasn't given. But it set up a kind of a grandstand finish, didn't it?
Yeah, well, I think perhaps the referee was maybe the most relieved person in the stadium, the Oita finally won it with that late goal, because it perhaps, you know, we might be talking about this penalty situation a lot more if it had affected the result more than it did. I think, yeah, I kind of agree with you that we don't want to go too far down the handball rabbit hole, because we'd be here all day. But I think I'm not very happy with the way the laws are written, because I think it does throw referees under the bus a little bit. Because, you know, like you, as you said, if the ball hits the defender's arm in the penalty area, that's supposed to be a penalty. But I googled a few different, I went through a few different, did my own research, James. I've been to a few different sources yesterday and today, kind of trying to get to the bottom of this. And there are lots of caveats to the handball rule, which mean that you can kind of, pretty much every time the ball hits a defender's arm in the penalty area, it can go both ways now, it seems like. So there's things like if the defender's arm is in a natural position, then it shouldn't be a penalty. It should only be a penalty if it's in an unnatural position. But I mean, I don't know about you, I have arms, and provided they're attached to my body in the right place, pretty much any position I could put them in is natural as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, running and sliding with your hands behind your back is unnatural, isn't it?
Right. But for example, if I'm a defender and I try to block a cross and I put my hands, clasp my hands together behind my back, what makes that natural? I don't understand what's natural about that position. I guess they mean that the you don't make your body bigger by extending your arms. But I'm not I don't have any sort of biology qualifications. But I would say your arms are perhaps part of your body. I don't know. I think they mean torso in the rules. They use the word body, where I think they mean torso. But anyway, as you can see, we're already down that rabbit hole. I promise we wouldn't go down.
Yeah, it's another 40 weeks of this.
Yeah,
listeners.
I think 41
weeks of this.
My problem is, I think maybe there has been some clarification on this already that I just haven't seen. But it would be really good as a fan, and I am just a fan. I would like the J League to clarify that decision. Like, I mean, if I was the manager of Oita, I would want a lot of details about what happened there, because a penalty was given and then the referee didn't look at it again because there's no VAR. Nobody looked at it again, but the referee changed his mind. So I think it's a tricky one. I also think it's a very dangerous. I mean, we just talked about Okayama and their kind of propensity for dialogue with match officials. I think it perhaps sets a dangerous precedent to say, oh, well, if you protest enough, if you get, like you said, if you get enough players around the referee, they might change their mind on a decision, and you might get a penalty, or you might get a penalty rescinded, which is the word that I couldn't find, which you used, which is the word I was looking for. But yeah, I just think it's a really kind of confusing. I think the most important thing is to arrive at the right decision, probably. But then we've seen in J1 with VAR, often just takes ages. It can take like 5 minutes to check a goal. And I think then you're at the point of like, well, is it that important that it, you know, we get the right decision if it takes 5-10 minutes to get the right call? I agree with you, though. I think if there had been VAR for this game, that penalty probably would have been given, because the ball did hit his arm. That's not in debate. It's the question becomes, well, it clearly wasn't deliberate. So in the handball rules that I grew up with, that's not a penalty because it wasn't a deliberate handball. But I think in the rules that we have now, once the ball hits your arm, the referee has to make a snap decision. And he made the decision it should have been a penalty. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where we are with this, but I think it's I would like, I'm not talking about hanging referees out to dry, but I'm convinced more and more that we need perhaps like some kind of post-match press conference with referees. Even if it's 5 minutes, even if they're on TV just for 5 minutes, and an interviewer reporter can just ask them, oh, so what happened there? You know, that would be way more interesting than the boring interviews you get with managers and players, I think, after the final whistle. So, okay. And on the match itself, James, we weren't very optimistic, or I certainly wasn't very optimistic about Oita for this season based on how many players they've lost. But I think they look pretty good, didn't they? You mentioned that they'll be relying a lot on Naoki Nomura for goals and chances this season. Well, he certainly came correct straight away, didn't he? Scoring that very, very well taken goal right at the start of the second half. So, yeah, I think Oita up and running and are perhaps starting to feel like I might have underestimated them a little bit. What did you make of them and what did you make of Tokushima?
Yeah, I think Tokushima, it seemed like same old problem. They had a lot of ball, but they didn't really look like scoring. They created some chances, but they couldn't finish them. And then, there are a lot of off-target efforts, I think. Oita, he looked all right. What I did like, yeah, that goal from Nomura was excellent. And also in the winning goal, that kind of scramble, I think it was Pereira. The ball fell to Pereira, and what most players would have done was they would have just smacked it forwards. And if he'd done that, it would have gone straight into a defender and been cleared. But he backheeled it sort of into a crowd, and no one was expecting that, and that's why it found its way through to Usamoto to score.
I think it was his compatriot Durlan.
That was really, really quick thinking, and it got them an extra couple of points, and they did all right. I think we were a bit of a downer for them last week or week before last, but well, it's only the first day, and that's why I keep telling myself, because my team lost. all right, I think that'll do for match day one. I'm going to have to borrow the This Week in VAR jingle from Big Pod when I edit this. Shall we, let's talk about match day two, shall we, coming up this weekend. We've got four games on Saturday the 25th. At 1 o'clock, Kofu play Tokushima, and then three games at 2 o'clock. Omiya against Kanazawa, Jeff United against Yamagata, and Fujieda against Nagasaki. John, anything from Saturday that particularly jumps out for you?
Yeah, we're at the stage of the season where I find all the games exciting James. But if I had to pick one, which I think I'm being asked to do, the Jeff Chiba against Yamagata game is intriguing because they both won away in round one. They both had pretty good performances, and Jeff are kind of quite famous for having a sort of one good result and then throwing it away in the next game. They're not being consistent. So this is like the first test of their kind of new management. Can they buck the trend of the last decade and actually, you know, string a couple of good results together? Likewise for Yamagata, obviously back-to-back away games. But I think two of your favourites from last year, Della Torre, and Thiago Alves looked pretty sharp, didn't they, in the game at Kofu in round one. So I'm very intrigued to see how those two stack up against each other. So from Saturday, Jeff against Yamagata for me. What about you?
I'm actually very interested in Kofu against Tokushima. Both teams lost their opening game. And Kofu, they weren't particularly bad, but they really struggled to deal with De La Torre and Zane Isaka and Thiago Alves of Yamagata. So I think they might struggle to deal with quite a lot of Tokushima's attackers. Whether Tokushima can take advantage of that is a big question, and we've been asking ourselves that for at least one season. So that's going to be an interesting one for me, I think. And of course, Omiya Kanazawa, I'll have to watch that, I suppose. But hopefully it'll be better than the week one. Sunday, the other games are on Sunday the 26th. We've got two games at 1 o'clock. Okayama against Shimizu and Kumamoto against Akita. Then at 1:05, Sendai play Tochigi. At 1:10, Oita kick off against Tokyo Verdy. At 1:15, Yamaguchi play Iwata. Then at 2 o'clock, Machida take on Gunma. And rounding out the weekend at 3 o'clock, Mito face Iwaki. John, what about Sunday's games?
I think the first point to mention is, as someone that I've never been diagnosed, but I'm pretty sure I have some form of OCD. The kickoff time's been staggered in this way. It's very pleasing, James. Like 1 p.m., 1:05, 1:10, 1:15.
So you can watch the first five minutes of the game and flick over.
But what I'm curious about is, how are teams going to spend the extra 5 minutes, or how are supporters going to spend the extra 5 minutes? Like, surely, if you're travelling to the Oi to match, the fact that it kicks off at 10 past one or 1 o'clock is neither here nor there, you know, for you. So I don't know. And the extra 15 minutes at Yamaguchi, I mean, is that really, you know, is that going to make a difference to anybody's life? I don't know. But I assume these kickoff times all go through some kind of centralization or checking process, and it's been given the okay. But you'd think maybe you'd stagger the kickoff times a bit more so that people like us could watch more games in full. Just another challenge that the league's put in front of us for this year, James. We'll do our best. I think in terms of actual matches, Okayama against Shimizu is one of the big ones, isn't it? Mm. 1 o'clock. Okayama, you know, they did have, I know we've talked about their sort of gamesmanship qualities, but in terms of actual football, it was a statement performance against Iwata. And now the very next game, their home opener is against the other relegated team from J1. If they can start the season with back-to-back wins against the two teams that were in J1 last year, well, I think people will have to sit up and take notice, won't they? For Shimizu, they did pretty much everything except score in round one against Mita. I think the kitchen sink, there's probably a kitchen sink shortage in Shimizu this week after the amount they threw at Mito. So it'll be interesting to see if they can get off the mark and get a goal. I expect that would be a bit of a banger, to be honest. I think that'll be a really good game. And then, if you don't fancy that one, just wait for 5 minutes and you can watch Sendai against Tochigi, which, again, Sendai kind of showed flashes against Machida, which I think was a very tough game for them in round one. They came away with a goalless draw and a point, which I think was a pretty good result for them considering the way the game went. And I'm very curious to see how they get on in their home opener against Tochigi, because obviously a lot of people are predicting top two for Sendai, it seems, this year, which I think is a bit, possibly a bit optimistic, but this will be our first chance to kind of see what their home form is going to be like this year. Crucial for promotion, of course. And I also thought five, again, if you don't fancy that one, just wait, go for a pee, you know, wait 5 minutes. Oita against Tokyo Verdy. Again, that's two teams that had a narrow victory in round one. And I'm still not really sure with Oita or Verdy where they're actually going to net out this season. I suspect sort of top half, but I'm not sure how much higher than that. So that'll be a good chance to kind of gauge those two teams against each other, I think. What about you?
Yeah, I'm actually, I agree with you on Okayama Shimizu. I think that's going to be really, really good, really interesting. Both teams played pretty well last week, although Shimizu somehow managed not to score. I'm also really interested in Mito against Iwaki, because Mito looked good against Shimizu and had a lot of good chances. They created a lot of good stuff going forwards, and they also somehow didn't score. And Iwaki, they did a lot of good attacking work against Fujieda. They scored the first goal in particular was really, really good, that little back heel flick. So I think I'm looking forward to that one. I agree about Oita and Verdy. I'm not sure about either of those. Verdy looked pretty comfortable against Kanazawa, although that was partly because Kanazawa were not so good. But Verdy's problem was that they didn't do enough with with the ball once they got close to Kanazawa's goal, and they probably should have had a lot more shots on target, or even shots off target. They just kind of wasted it. So although that one was only 1-0, it was a very comfortable 1-0. So I think like you said, it's because it's only round two, and so the teams that didn't win last week will be, you know, eager to get their first win, and teams that did win last week will be obviously eager to keep winning. And I think it sets it up nicely. The kickoff times are weird. I'm not sure why they've staggered them every 5 minutes, but
what we need clarification on already this season is the handball rules and kickoff times.
Well, I don't know, it's probably some like high school athletics thing before or after or whatever, I don't know. Anyway, it's going to be good. I'm really happy that J2 is back and J1 is back as well. So it's nice to actually talk to you about football, John. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no worries. Anytime, James. Thanks.
All right. And thanks, everyone, for listening. And thanks to everyone who supports us on Patreon. And, keep an ear out for the last of Mike Innes's J3 preview pods. That'll be coming up soon as well. And enjoy your football, and see you next time.